Peoples, this is the Conspiracy Oz Podcast. I'm your host, Mick Raven. It is Thursday, the 4th of January, 2024. This is a review covering alternative news and events. You can call +61 02 8006 1918 anytime. Drop me an email at conspiracyoz@protonmail.com. Go to the website conspiracyoz.com. Download the podcast from iTunes, Spotify, or podomatic.com and get with the D program. Okay, people, I was sent a video. Now, this video is mind-blowing. I'm only going to play the audio. It goes for 12 minutes. You have to hear this. Okay, it's just when I was sent the link, I felt that I knew what was going to be on as a subject matter, because this is about a statement made by three people about the COVID jab rollout and the cause and effect. Now, this is big deal. This is a big deal. It's already been, they're trying to debunk it worldwide now with all the fact checkers coming out and saying, oh, this is bogus. Have a listen yourself. Now, I will put the video up as well so you can see it visually, because they've got charts in there. And you do need to see these charts, because they show you quite clearly from their studies, what they've published, exactly what they're talking about. But when you hear what they've got to say about it, that's going to want you to go and see the video to see these charts. But I tell you what, the subject matter, I'll let them say it, I'm not going to do it, is mind-blowing. I'll just leave you with this statement that they made, that out of the 22 million people that has so far died attributed to COVID-19, okay, from the SARS-CoV-2 virus, these people claim that 17 million were killed by the vaccine. That is a huge statement. Okay, so the article or the video is actually called Staggering 17 Million Deaths After the COVID Jab Rollout. Doctors Dennis Rancourt, Marine Bourdin and Jeremy Mercier. Okay, so this is on, it's on Rumble. You're never going to see it on YouTube, of course, because it'll be blocked instantly. This is when you know we are really in danger, because the powers that be are controlling the narrative. So it doesn't matter whether something's true or not, they control the narrative. So these people are obviously forced onto Rumble. The site's called Bright Light News. And just the fact that they're making these statements, because you know yourself from what I've said. I'm only talking about Australia because that's all I know. And I'm only talking about basic statistics that come from worlddominer.info. Not Bill Gates's mate at World in Data. And at World Dominant on Info, because it's sort of, it's not aligned to anyone, and they just put data out as they get it. All right, and that's, you know, that's all you can do. You can only put out the data that you collate from the different sources and then put it out there and see what happens. Because the data is what drove the entire pandemic. Without the data saying this many people died and this many are infected, no one would have listened. Okay, so that's when you know they've got the green light to say what they want. It doesn't matter. It convinces doctors as well. It convinces politicians and doctors the data as well. So the data is king. And, of course, the king of data at the moment is Bill Gates, Mr. Microsoft. So this is where you really have to listen to people and listen to what they've got to say about their statistics and the facts that they have uncovered. Okay, they're not all crazies and silly. Like I said, the Australian one that I saw, and just in black and white, you can go and look at this yourself. You don't even need me to tell you it. It's actually in black and white. You can find it anywhere. If you go to worlddominer.info, if you want to get to it quicker, go to conspiracyoz.com like I have, and click on it, and it's set up on the site, on conspiracyoz.com, to go to the Australian statistics straight away. And if you scroll down to the deaths, so far, since the pandemic started, you will see a correlation where the death rate rises after the vaccination starts and continues to rise as people get more boosters and more shots. And to me, we're a population that was actually affected by COVID-19. I do believe there is something that was released, didn't kill that many people. It is still transmissible. Not really being reported on anymore because, of course, it did the damage and still doing the damage, where 1,000 people had died and it plateaued to that all the way up to the jabbing. And then, of course, as soon as the jabbing started, 22,000 already dead. So I'm just and rising. So I'm just saying to you, that alone to me speaks to something is wrong. Because I thought, and what most people thought in the very beginning, that the jabbing, and I never believed it anyway because I'd already onto it, but a lot of other people did, and I was in two minds, that the jabbing would reduce the spread and the death rate from COVID-19, and it did not. Okay? And this is why I was hesitant, didn't get the jab. Just about everyone around me did. Okay? And I went through a very rough time where I was blamed like a leper. Oh, you didn't get the jab, not one of us. It was a really bad thing. You had to be on that side of the fence to understand how dangerous that whole period was. It still is, but most people have put it behind them, but they're still jabbed up. And some of them continue to get jabbed up, okay? We all thought it was going to be like a flu and just kill everyone in winter. No, it kills people in summer. I'm talking about the vaccine, not the actual disease or whatever it is that they've given a name to and a picture. Remember, they give it a little picture and everything, and here it is, floating around in the air, ready to get you. Hence the sirens up and down the streets day and night. This is what I'm saying. So when you have a listen to this, keep that in mind, that these people are looking at data. They're looking at core morbidities and post-morbidities. So these are the people that have already had something wrong with them. Remember, at the peak of the pandemic, when they started the jabbing and had the fear campaign at 110%, people were told that the ones that should get the jabs first are the very elderly, the ones that have core morbidities, disabled. In Australia, it was the Aboriginal population. They were actually lauded as the ones that should be first. It's fair to let them go first. And yet most of the death rate is attributed to that part of the population. So I'm sorry, but the correlation is black and white. It's very obvious what this agenda wants to do. Okay, so I'll let them speak for 12 minutes. It's only 12 minutes. You must hear this. It's an absolute must listen to. And then later on, when I put the link up on the site, because I am falling very far behind on the podcast, this probably won't come out till Thursday or even on Friday, simply because of the Christmas period. But just to say, because I'm still going to do the COVID rats tonight as well. There'll be three of them as well, as like last week. But I didn't want to do every episode for months just on the COVID rats. And there are a lot of them, people. As I stated earlier, there are so many. So basically, I'm just going to look for the big kingpins. Okay, so we're talking about the leaders of each state and territory. We're also talking about the head of the medical establishment at the time that pushed this jab onto everybody. These people are 100% accountable, okay, for what they did. And just about all of them, except Andrew Barr in the AC2, who's the premier there, have run. Death threats or not, they've run. They're gone. End of the pandemic, bags of gold, gone. Okay, people? So the focus will always be on them. And when I finally put the class of COVID-19, the COVID Rats of Oz, I will leave it as a widget on conspiracyoz.com for as long as it takes. Just like the executive board of the WHO that rubber stamped it for the rest of the world, I will update that as well. But at the same time, it's a massive can of worms, people. This is a very... this is almost like a military operation between countries that agreed on how this was going to happen. And the rest of the world got no say. You know, emergency powers. Anyone that tried to rebuke it was jailed, or they were put into quarantine and ridiculed in their own communities. This is a major event that occurred in the world that has changed some people forever, never to go back to the way they were. Anyway, without much ado, I'll let this roll. Have a listen. And then I'll comment at the end. And like I said, you need to see the video as well because of the graphs. So I can explain the graphs in the post, but at the same time, you're probably better off looking at it yourself, because there's other videos that have been sent to me too that I need to talk about as well, related to exactly the same subject. So this one is like a Canadian type study. They're not saying that in this. I'm just going to look at the transcript now and just see if they mention that. So I'll just read off the transcript, and then I'll let the video tell you all about it. So it's got November the 19th, 2023, a groundbreaking study by Drs. Dennis Rancourt, Maureen Borden and Jeremy Mercier found 17 million people died worldwide after the COVID vaccine rollout. You have to remember, each country, we're all screaming for the vaccine. So that it's very well documented when the vaccine rollouts happened in each country and the data that coincides with that, where the death rate climbed. Okay, they can say it's Omicron, they can say variants, but as I state in the video, you can't have variants going off at the same time in different countries. And I did make a note of that as we looked at how the actual COVID-19 mutated in different countries at different times, and they gave those variants different names for the different level of infection or transmission at the time, if you remember, back when I did that study on the whole world map. This is where they've collated the data after the event to look back and see what's happened. So they say that they calculate the toxicity of the vaccine for all ages. This is explained by Dr. Rancourt. Given the number of doses given worldwide, to conclude that 17 million people would have been killed by the vaccine. That is a huge statement, people. That is a huge statement to stand by. It says the shocking study, COVID-19 vaccine-associated mortality in the Southern Hemisphere, where I am, people, was published in September the 17th, 2023, and rather than garnering worldwide attention, has met only censorship and narrative confirming fact checks on the safety and effectiveness of the yet untested COVID-19 vaccines. So there you go. This is where they've actually already done an earlier study in the Southern Hemisphere, probably just different countries as well, so they can get an idea of, oh, it only happens in winter in the Northern Hemisphere, where it's also happening, the death rate, in Australia and other Southern Hemisphere countries with vaccine rollouts in the summer. And so this is it. It's not something that's like a flu like we all thought. It's actually a orchestrated part of an agenda to lower the population. And that's exactly what it's doing. So without much ado, and I just turned the fan off, people. Fan blowing during that. So you've probably got a little bit of background noise, but I've turned it off now. Have a listen to this audio of this video, and I'll get it up tonight as quick as I can and go and check it out. This is something we really need to know about. This is a smoking gun that needs to be held up to the globalists' head, to the rest of the world, to show them that this was the real agenda, not to save people at all.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. We're here at International Crisis Summit number 4 here in Romania. It's November the 19th, and an honor to be here with Dr. Denis Rancourt, Dr. Maureen Borden, and Dr. Jeremy Mercier. They have written a stunning paper that the world should know about that says that the COVID-19 mRNA genetic injections have killed
17 million people.
Yep. Absolutely stunning. Can you please tell us more about the paper?
That's the global number. We studied many countries in Latin America and in the equatorial region, so we have a representative sample of the world, we believe. Many injections, it's what, it's 10% of the world population, 9% of injections, or the other way around. So the number we extract from our analysis allows us, we calculate the toxicity of the vaccine for all ages, and the number allows us, given the number of doses that have been given worldwide, to conclude that 17 million people would have been killed by this vaccine.
And what I would like to add, it's that the data we're working with is all-cause mortality, so it's nothing related to COVID mortality or anything else. It's like you just count death, so it's 0-1. There is no bias in attributing any cause or something.
This idea of working on an unbiased data is very important because most people are working on COVID death, which means nothing basically, and we wanted to remove any bias so that we have solid data and an analysis that really can be extrapolated to the whole world, because we have data on countries and on
four continents,
yeah, as well, so it's a very solid data.
And it is a data that you can have by function of time, so it could be by day, by week, by month, by a function of characteristic of the individuals, like the sex, the age, and other characteristics, and by jurisdictions as well, so it's very powerful.
But having it by time, like by week or by month, and by age group, means that you can actually see when there's a rollout of a booster, for example, which happens very quickly in time for a given age group, you can actually see immediately following it a maximum in the all-cause mortality. So an excess mortality actual peak that's temporally associated with that rollout. And we see that repeatedly for each rollout.
Consistently across all countries?
All the countries that have sufficient data where you're able to look at it and you have both the vaccine data and the mortality data, this is what we see. And we can quantify it, therefore. And so we can quantify the toxicity of the vaccine, your risk of dying per injection.
And what's really interesting with, it's not cherry picking, choosing those countries. It's very important to understand that when you look at all-cause mortality, you see that deaths are increasing in the winter and decreasing in the summer. And it's the opposite in the southern hemisphere. Their summer is our winter, so in the summer you should have low death. But during the COVID vaccine campaign, suddenly you see spikes in mortality right after vaccine campaigns. And it's very clear because it's in the summer where you should see a low death period. So it's incredible to see such a dramatic correlation between vaccination campaigns and spike death.
Yeah.
Especially in the boosters, like for the southern hemisphere, like the, you have a peak, you know, across the boosters will roll out basically everywhere at the same time around the world. And in the southern hemisphere, it's a trough, as Jeremy just explained, so we should have a trough. But then you have an actual winter peak, actual booster peak, and another winter peak.
Yes.
So that's everywhere in all the 17 countries we worked out. Where data is good in the southern hemisphere, we saw that peak.
And something you never saw before.
Exactly.
It's a new phenomenon.
Yes, that's right. Yes. And once you see it, once you recognize it, and you know that the boosters are lethal in this way, then you go back to the data where you're dealing with winter data, and you see that those winters are particularly intense when they had a booster at the same time. And so you can quantify it in the northern hemisphere as well. So all around, and we're now expanding this to be more than 100 countries, but we systematically see definitively that there is more mortality during the vaccine campaigns, and that there are specific peaks in mortality associated with each rollout in each age group and in many places around the world that cannot be understood in terms of all of a sudden there's a new deadly variant, you know. And we give arguments in the paper as to why it cannot be this silly argument that a new variant is always popping up at this time. One of the arguments is, if it were a question of variants, these peaks could not be synchronous around the world when everyone decided to follow the same schedule and put out their boosters at the same time. A new variant occurs in one place and has to spread. You don't get synchronous peaks on an entire hemisphere. So that's one of the counterarguments to the variant theory, but we have a whole series and we explained it in the paper. So we wrote, this is our most recent paper, and we really did it in detail. But it's not the first paper that we've written about the toxicity of the vaccines, because we've done a series, right?
Mm-hmm. With Israel, Australia.
Mm-hmm. Well, the first one,
Canada, France,
India, me.
India. Oh yeah, you did India.
Yeah, I noticed in my reading and in my study what was happening in India, so I went ahead and just wrote a paper very, very quickly because I didn't need data analysis because people had already studied India and had shown the data. And saw this incredible increase of mortality with the vaccination campaign, but didn't associate it to the vaccination campaign. So all I did was point out, there it is. No excess mortality whatsoever in India until they roll out the vaccine and then this huge peak. That's not a coincidence. And I explained how it couldn't be a coincidence and so on. So I quickly looked at four papers, reviewed them, and said, hey, India is a classic example of mortality induced by vaccination.
And Romania, you showed some data yesterday.
Yes.
It was the exact same, no excess death increase after COVID was...
So March, April 2020,
right.
no change in mortality.
At the same time, where in the Western world, you typically often had hotspots that had peaks then, the Eastern Bloc countries and Romania do not have excess mortality at the beginning of the pandemic, okay? But in the following fall, you know, they do have a very large increase before they start vaccinating.
Mm-hmm.
And that is classic for Russia and the Eastern Bloc countries. And we're still trying to understand that. And you've interviewed people that they're helping you to understand this.
Yes.
A very aggressive social policy, social medical policy. Very, very aggressive.
So we're talking about 17 million at the time of publishing. When was that most recent paper published?
17th of September.
And what would that data be if you were to update it? Are you able to give any approximation?
About the same, because you see it's based on the quantified toxicity of the vaccine multiplied by the number of doses. And since the doses are saturating now, it's a plateau, you see, so basically they're not vaccinating much more around the world anymore. So the total number of doses is remaining the same. So our estimate wouldn't change. That's probably close to a saturation value. But now there may be longer time effects, like due to, you were going to say,
No.
Turbo cancers or something like that, maybe. And we're going to look at that. We're going to look at that. But the data we have up till now is robust data for the deaths that immediately follow the injections.
It's absolutely incredible to me that this was published September 17th of this year. It's not made headlines. Mainstream media, silence, deafening.
We got one fact-checking from the Agence France-Presse.
Yeah, that's true.
The fact-checkers.
We had some fact-checkers.
There was a big fact-checking organization also on the English side. And the two different fact-checkers that I saw were giving different reasons that it was wrong.
Can you speak to one of those criticisms and then the response to it?
The one in English that I remember is that, we were measuring, in many countries, we were measuring COVID deaths at the same time as a function of time. And these peaks in mortality that they're talking about, there are peaks in COVID deaths as well. Mm. I mean, that's just a silly, ridiculous criticism, because COVID death means respiratory problems. And we acknowledge that the vaccine will kill people, but that the actual mechanism from the weakened attacked metabolism will often be bacterial pneumonia or whatever. It'll be respiratory. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the main killer. So we're not, you see, when you say the vaccine killed someone, what you mean is it accelerated their death such that it occurs soon after vaccination. Mm-hmm. That's what you mean. You get a peak there, right? Mm-hmm. But you're not saying that there were no comorbidities. You're not saying that these are deaths that were caused solely by a toxic injection. No, you're saying, because there was a toxic injection with the comorbidities that exist in that fragile population, people died because of it immediately following it. They try to blur things by claiming, comorbidities. Yeah, and that's why you should not inject them, because they're at higher risk. But you did, and you killed them. You see,
and
that's
also
the point.
And I wanted to say, we need to insist on the fact that the older you are, the more risk you have of taking the injection. We calculated this VTFR, vaccine dose fatality rate, that increases exponentially with age. So that's very important data to consider.
We were the first to demonstrate that the toxicity of the vaccine increases exponentially with your age and has a doubling time of 4 or 5 years in age. So every 4 or 5 years in age, your risk of dying from the next injection doubles. And so in Romania, when you get into the 80-plus-year-olds, you're looking at a very high risk of dying per injection. Like, our estimates right now are one death per 5 to 10 injections in Romania in the 80-plus-year-olds. Yes.
And that's why it implies that prioritizing vaccination for the elderly people or fragile people, it's really not something we should do. And we saw this also in Peru, they were specifically in the vaccine festival campaign, they specifically said, this is a list of people with comorbidities that you should go get the vaccines.
Yeah, they killed 3.7 million people in India with the vaccine rollout.
How are these deaths being covered up? Not
with propaganda.
Yes.
And they're covered up locally because an elderly person dies and nobody complains and nobody goes out of their way to make the relationship to the injection.
Fantastic work that you're doing. Thank you so much.
If I could add, all of our research reports on these questions are at correlation-canada.org.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
Okay, while the video was playing, I actually uploaded it to conspiracyhealth.com. So you can go there now, and I've got mind-blowing. Watch this space. And it's got a groundbreaking study by Dr. Dennis Rancourt, Marine Bourdin, and Jeremy Mercier found 17 million people died worldwide after the COVID vaccine rollout. So I've also got where the original article came from with a link. And it says The shocking study, COVID-19 vaccine-associated mortality in the Southern Hemisphere, and there's a link to that too, people, was published September 17, 2023. That's what they talk about in the actual video. Now, I couldn't put up, it wouldn't link to documents that you do need to look at. I just got a snippet of the document, but you need to go to the link that I put with it. This, in other words, there's three stories. There's the video, the original story, plus this other one about the facts. And of course, at the end of the article, they go on about the fact checkers. But these are the facts that they put together that you need to look at, and all the links are there as well. And it has a document with, I'm just seeing how many pages is in it, 180 pages. So this is a very, very intense study that they put together, which is called COVID-19 Vaccine-Associated Mortality in the Southern Hemisphere. And it's and I'll see if I can go to the conclusion, because it's 180 pages and I'm definitely not going to summarise that. But in the abstract right at the beginning, it's got 17 equatorial and southern hemisphere countries were studied, and they named them all. Argentina, Australia, Bolivia, Brazil, Chile, Colombia, Ecuador, Malaysia, New Zealand, Paraguay, Peru, Philippines, Singapore, South Africa, it looks like Suriname, I'm not even sure what that is, it says Thailand and Uruguay. So obviously they have gone into lots of areas that span four continents to get the data. And it says in the 17 countries there is no evidence in all-cause mortality by time data of the beneficial effect of COVID-19 vaccines. There is no association in time between the COVID-19 vaccination and any proportionate reduction in the actual benefit, which is the all-cause mortality. The opposite occurs. It says all 17 countries have transitioned to regimes of high all-cause mortality, which occur when the COVID-19 vaccines are deployed and administered. 9 of the 17 countries have no detectable excess of all-cause morbidity, which I'll call ACM from now on, in the period of approximately 1 year after a pandemic was declared on the 11th of March 2020 by the World Health Organization. Until the vaccines are rolled out, and they've got Australia, Malaysia, New Zealand, Paraguay, Philippines, Singapore, and I'm going to spell this one out because it's probably something everyone out there knows, this country. It's Suriname. So it looks like Suriname, Thailand and Uruguay. It says unprecedented peaks in ACM occur in the summer, January to February of 2022, in the Southern Hemisphere and in equatorial latitude countries, which are synchronous with and immediately preceded by rapid COVID-19 vaccine booster dose rollouts, third or fourth doses. This phenomenon is present in every case with sufficient mortality data, 15 countries. Two of the countries studied have insufficient mortality data in January-February 2022, which is Argentina and the aptly named Suriname. It says, detailed mortality and vaccination data for Chile and Peru allow resolution by age and by dose number. It is unlikely that the observed peaks in all-cause mortality in January-February 2022 and additionally in July-August 2021. Chile in July-August 2022. Peru, it says in each or of both countries and in each elderly age group could be due to any cause other than the temporary associated rapid COVID-19 vaccine booster dose rollouts. It says likewise, it is unlikely that the transitions to regimes of high ACM coincident with the rollout and sustained administration of COVID-19 vaccines. It says in all Southern Hemisphere and equatorial latitude countries could be due to any cause other than vaccines. So this is what the statistics are saying. And then it says synchronicity between the many peaks in ACM in 17 countries on 4 continents, in all elderly age groups at different times, and associated rapid booster rollouts allow this firm conclusion regarding, looks like an accurate qualification of COVID-19 vaccine toxicity. The all ages vaccine dose fatality rate, which is the ratio of inferred vaccine reduced deaths to vaccine doses delivered in a population, so the correlation, is quantified for the January-February 2022 ACM peak to fall in the range of 0.02%, that's New Zealand, in 0.2% in Uruguay, in Chile and Peru, the VDFR, which is the vaccine dose fatality rate, increases exponentially with age, doubling approximately every 4 years of age, and is the largest of the latest booster doses, reaching approximately 5% in the 90-year age groups. One death per 20 injections of dose 4. Comparable results occur for the Northern Hemisphere, as found in previous articles from India, Israel, and the US. So they are saying, people, that the amount of boosters in certain countries with a certain age group, they can actually give you a ratio of what you may, what might kill you. Let them go and listen to the video, and they'll tell you the actual, what the chances are of you dying of, if you've been vaccinated, and in your age group, what sort of a risk you've taken with this COVID hoax as it is. Now, I'm not going to read the rest of it, but I'm going to see if I can fast forward right to conclusion, because they'll probably say a little bit more like the abstract, but it'll be the conclusion. So I'm not even sure if there is a conclusion at the end of this. I'm right at the end now. There's a whole stack of graphs. I'm just scrolling back up to the top to see if somewhere there's a conclusion. Doesn't look like they have, but the data is there. And this is an intense study, people. It's an absolute intense study. And at least they've done some real world data here where people can look at it. And if I can find this conclusion, because this is what I'm really looking for, just to give it a simple sort of yes and no at the end. And it doesn't look like it's going to do it. I am up to 148 pages and it looks like an index. So I'm just going to keep scrolling them. I usually always have a conclusion in these sort of data papers and medical papers. It's all, yeah, that was the references. So I'm still scrolling up, hoping that there's a conclusion. Oh, there it is. So it's mark number 7, conclusion. And it says the 17 countries studied Argentina, I'm not going to go through the list again, but the list I said earlier, comprised 10% of a worldwide population, and it's got 10.3% of worldwide COVID-19 injections, vaccination rate 1.91 injections per person, all ages, virtually every COVID-19 vaccine type and manufacturer, and span 4 continents. It says a scientific test for casualty are amply satisfied, as extensively demonstrated in these sections of the present paper. It says COVID-19 vaccines can cause death. Absence of excess mortality until the COVID-19 vaccines are rolled out. It says the COVID-19 vaccines did not save lives and appear to be lethal toxic agents. It says strong evidence for a causal association and vaccine lethal toxicity. It says casualty causes... I said casualty before, but it's causality. Sometimes I've got to go back and do the correction. I think I was calling Mr. Magoo last week, which is Mark McGowan. I was calling Mark McGovern. I don't even know where I got that from. But yeah, sometimes there's Freudian slips. Let me know in the emails, as people usually do, if I slip up with some of this English. Now, remember, I don't usually speak English. I usually speak Australian. Just thought I'd get that out there before the barrage. Now, continuing. It says causality in excess mortality is amply demonstrated. Now, all these bullet points I'm reading are actually going to another part of the study. So you click on that, takes you to another section. So they're just like headers. And it says assessing other interpretations of the cause of the excess mortality. It's got implications regarding age dependence of fatal toxicity of the COVID-19 vaccines. And it says also, there is no known facts that disprove the inferred and quantitative causal relation between the observed excess ACM peaks and the temporally associated COVID-19 vaccine and booster rollouts. So this is the mortality rate that I was trying to put together way back when to see the correlation between the vaccine rollout and the mortality rate. And these people have actually done the study. They've nailed it. Like, they've got the exact data of when boosters and vaccines were administered, and then they looked at the mortality rate and saw it skyrocket. It's that easy, people. It's that easy to see the data and see how the correlation works and how they have put this study together. And really, the data speaks for itself. They already found the needle in the haystack, and now they're exposing it. Of course, they're getting absolutely no support, which is why I put it on the podcast. Now, just take another snippet out of that conclusion, because this was a really big find as well, and they've documented it. So it says, there can be little doubt that the peaks in excess of the ACM are caused by the COVID-19 vaccinations, with a means all ages fatal toxicity by injection. It says, or approximately one death per 800 injections, which is reasonably expected to be globally representative. It says this is a staggering number compared to what is generally believed about traditional vaccines, which is approximately one serious adverse effect per million. So there you go, people. This is the black and white data. The COVID-19 pandemic was orchestrated as a depopulation tool and to boost the QR coding, so they know where everyone on the planet is when they start to orchestrate a world government, which is exactly why they're doing it. These whole ideas of a pandemic that comes under the WHO as an emergency rule has now been rubber stamped as well. So if the next pandemic comes, they take the reins for the entire planet. So then I'll have to do another study on who's sitting in the executive board of the WHO, which is going to rubber stamp the next pandemic. And speaking of the next variant, which has now hit the headlines as well, this is from ZeroHedge.com, which I'm subscribed to. You should do the same. It came out on December the 31st, 2023. Experts say the new COVID strain will cause global heart failure pandemic. Don't you love that, people? The good news about the new year. It says a new strain known as JN.1 will cause many people to suffer from reduced cardiac function, according to the report. It says Japan's top research institute, RIKEN, R-I-K-E-N, has now issued a warning in the new report, which states that the ACE2 receptors, which the coronavirus clings to within human cells, are very common in the heart. Well, they would be now. Even though conclusive clinical evidence that the persistent SARS-CoV-2 infection is associated with decline cardiac function has not been reported so far, the proof of concept study of the possibility of SARS-CoV-2 persistent infection of the heart and the potential risk of opportunistic progression of heart failure should be validated by a three-dimensional human cardiac tissue model, which would serve as the alarm bell for a global healthcare risk, states the report. It says health officials suggested people should be wary of the gathering for New Year's Eve celebrations, warning yet again that hospitals would be at risk of being stretched to the breaking point. Despite everything we've learned about the association between COVID vaccines and serious heart problems, it appears they're now trying to rebrand the heart problems as being caused by COVID itself. Oh well, guess we better take another round of the 100% safe and effective then. It says, once the new booster is rolled out, expect another spate of healthy professional sports stars suddenly collapsing in the middle of the field as a result of, checks notes, the JN.1 COVID strain. So there you go. And it says, and I think that's the end of it. Yeah, it's just a bunch of, they've added a bunch of Twitter replies to it. And it's got the new variant. Someone's written this. I thought it was pretty funny. The new variant is called the Vax. It says, another person, this is a cover story for the vaccine damages already causing heart problems. And then it's got know the high risk side effects of the mRNA, pericarditis, myocarditis, heart failure, strokes, blood clots. And it says, and also a huge rise in excess deaths. And that's what I was just talking about earlier on that that audio from the video. And it's got here, a heart pandemic. Who would have thought that? And then another one says, how convenient. I mean, this is what Bill Gates was saying. The second pandemic that comes, you will notice it. But this is more or less a variant of the COVID-19 pandemic, which is the pandemic 1.0. Yeah, so moving on. Someone's written here. I'll just put this one. Just it says, does this have anything to do with Pfizer acquiring the Arena Pharmaceuticals for the $6.7 billion? Ask yourself, what do they make? Inflammatory medications, you know, so they can continue causing side effects with product number one, then turn around and cure you with product number two. And another person's written, what a joke. Everyone knows it's the Vax. And then the final one here I'll read because there's so many of them. Would it be like the old type variant where we saw an increase in heart problems? On and on it goes. I mean, people are getting it, but you've got to remember these people are trying. These globalists are trying as hard as they can to take us all out. And they'll use every method and all their billions of dollars to do it. You have to be on your guard, people. Use common sense. If something isn't working, maybe it's not meant to work. Now, on a totally different subject, and I will come back in the last hour to do the three next head on the chopping blocks to do with the COVID rats of Oz. But this story is a bit off center. It's something I have been talking about for more than a decade, and it's to do with toxic waste. And I'm talking about radioactive toxic waste to be finally dumped in Australia. And they're talking about low level, but it'll go to medium and then high. And this will pave the way for nuclear energy to be built on Australian soil, even though we've had it blocked for a very long time. It seems that those barricades are coming down, especially after someone like Bill Gates a few months back came to Australia, saw Anthony Albanese, the Prime Minister, had a chin wag, and obviously promoted his nuclear power plant called Terra Power, which I thought was aptly named. But yeah, and this is all facts. So the story came out abc.net.au on the 4th of November, 2023. So I grabbed this story and I've put up the title on conspiracyoz.com, Not in My Backyard. And it's got Native Title Holders Vote to support vast underground toxic waste storage facility south of Alice Springs, as if they haven't got enough toxicity in the Alice as it is now. It's going to get worse, people. It says Native Title Holders have voted to support the construction of a controversial toxic waste storage facility about 120 kilometres south of Alice Springs after 12 years of consultation. So I've known about this. Also about Western Australia, South Australia, where they've been trying to dump the toxic waste. Because, as most people might not know, but they might, they want Australia as the world's dumping ground for nuclear waste. France already sends stuff here, low level, but now they want to use it for high level. That's what's going to happen. And they're going to push the green machine. Now, the funny thing about the green machine is they want you to be sustainable and environmentally conscious. This is the globalist, because we're all emitting carbon dioxide, and they would like to extinguish us with the new euthanasia laws, which are starting to push all around the world. In other words, they're just enacting them at the moment. They're not really turning them on just yet for everybody. But at the same time, what they need is people to be convinced that oil and gas is evil. Very bad. And there are stories popping up now about the Gaza Marine The reason Israel is trying to chase the Palestinians out of the Gaza Strip is because just off the coast there is literally billions of dollars of gas, which they've been squabbling about for over 10 years between the Palestinians and the Israelis. And then I saw another story too, and I should talk about this, not probably today, but I will look into it, where they're saying that what they want to do is build a pipeline to Europe from the Middle East. This is why they bypass Russia and their gas and oil. This is what they're trying to do. This was something in the pipeline. I mean, that's a terrible pun. But that's really what's been discussed. And I didn't think of that. That's a bigger picture than just grabbing the billions of dollars worth of gas off the coast of Gaza, where they can actually construct this pipeline, which will be obviously, it'll give Israel even more power over Europe if they're controlling the gas reserves. So they gave the go-ahead back in, I think it was June last year, to start looking at the gas. Whereas the Palestinians said, hey, you can't do that. We're in court. Nobody owns it. You know, the Palestinians claim it, but so does Israel. So this makes me think, well, hang on, that's what sparked the war. I understand that. They're trying to twist the story now that Hamas attacked them because they've opened up the gas reserves to be looked at. Because at the moment, that's all it is. It's exploration. And when they finally go in there, all the other countries around there they want a piece of the pie too. So this is going to be very interesting that's what's causing the problem, is that Russia's withholding its gas and oil simply because they were sanctioned to do that. Just what? Ironic. But now it looks like there is a shortage of energy in the Middle East and Europe, and it's caused by this. Because remember, Syria's got gas reserves too, and they're tied in with Russia, which is the reason that George Soros had the Arab Spring from Tunisia all the way to Syria, where they were collapsing all the countries on the way through. When they got to Syria, Putin put his jackboot in the door and stopped the New World Order in its tracks, which is why he's a bad guy. He was one of them. Now he's a bad guy because he didn't go through with the deal. In other words, he got cold feet and decided to look after his own nest, as Russians normally do, because they always get attacked all the time. So you can't blame him for that. Doesn't justify his war in any means, but at the same time, it's a war that's been going on for a very long time, and it looks like the Americans and the Israelis are getting involved in world affairs again, and it seems to me that they are aligned together, which they always have been, but it's becoming very clear now who's on whose side. We even had Iran on the news today saying that they've got nothing to do with the Palestinians and what's happening there, that it wasn't, you know, nothing to do with Hamas. And then you had the second Hamas leader taken out in Lebanon by the Israelis, but they're not saying they did it. But it's pretty obvious why he was a target. Same time, very messy people, but you've got to strip it away, all the religion and all the attacking that's been going on for a very, very long time. And just look at the big picture. The big picture is energy is what these people need. And in Australia, they are pushing to get rid of oil and gas too, the same. But the problem is we do not have the megawatts or the power to replace what we're taking away. So what will that leave people? A great big hole, a vacuum in energy. And guess who wants to fill, guess who wants to fit the bill? Well, there it is, Bill Gates. He wants to fit the bill. He wants to come here and start building his nuclear power plants and save us. And that brings me to another story I just saw. This was an incredible story. It's a very simple one. I just saw it and I almost forgot about it. And I'll come back to the toxic waste story, because that's the beginning of it. That's where the doors slowly open to let all these bloodsuckers of that type of energy into this country, which has always been banned. We've always fought against it. But it looks like those barricades, as I just said before, are slowly coming down. But check this story out that came out. This is it's just a side story, but I thought this needs to be mentioned, because this is how they target Australians that are vulnerable with a new energy plan to get away from oil and gas and even relying on the power stations, the coal-fired power stations. One sec. Okay, it's abc.net.au, and the title of the story is Tasmanian Former Hydro Town Bought by Christian Group Throws Support Behind Big Battery Projects Our Planet Needs. This came out on the 4th of January 2024. And it goes on to say this. Nestled at the footsteps of the Western Tiers, marking the edge of Tasmania's Central Plateau and Great Lake, sits an intentional Christian community. The town of Potina was once a hub for Tasmania's Hydroelectric Commission in the 1960s and home to about 3,000 residents. The hydro power station is still nearby, but the town has shifted and shrunk since its heyday, with the population dwindling to about 100. It says, Potina now markets itself as an open community of people informed by Christian values after being bought by the Christian youth and community organisation Fusion Australia in 1995. It says, John West has called the town home for the past 10 years after a busy career working internationally for World Vision. It says daily management of the town sits under the Potina Village Body Corporate, which Mr. West chairs. Things have changed a little in the last 12 or 15 years, whereby it's the community who is now making decisions about what it's doing, he said. But what it still retains at the heart are the values that Jesus taught us. Well, of course, it's a bit like, it looks like a Quaker setup, I think. But anyway, I'll keep reading. It says, faith, not the only renewable energy. This is an interesting story. There's a big twist in this, people. Mr. West is now preparing for the town's next potential change as he keeps tabs on the progress of two planned grid-connected batteries. Now, this is it. Get ready. Acacia Energy, which is owned, and you'll know the name, by American hedge fund giant BlackRock. and French energy national Neon, both have proposals seeking the final green light. They would be built next to a substation just 6 kilometres from the town. Now, why would BlackRock, one of the biggest hedge fund managers in the world worth trillions of dollars, be interested in 100 people on a Christian property out in the middle of nowhere in Tasmania? I'll read on. The two batteries would generate more than 240 megawatts of energy, enough for tens of thousands of homes. Not sure about that. Construction approval has been granted by the Northern Midlands Council, but they still need to tick off from the state's energy distributor, TAS Networks. It says once built, the batteries would be fed from sources including the development of the giant Northern Midlands solar farm, which the council has also approved. With its hydro history and substation, Potina is well petitioned for renewable energy projects to feed into the state's power grid. It's an ambition the community backs. Now it gets very silly. It says the Book of Revelation is reflected in what I'm seeing unfolding. Ellen Evans, 47, has lived in Potina for the past year, working in the town's small post office. She feels right at home in the community. I've only been a believer for 7 years, but the difference that it's made in my life has been huge, she said. During that time, Miss Evans has fallen in love with Tasmania's natural environment and what she describes as the state's untouched natural heritage. However, against the backdrop of a warming climate, they had to put that in, didn't they, and continued habitat disruption, Miss Evans has drawn on her faith to reconcile this clash. I read the Bible every day, and there's a book in it called the Book of Revelations, which, in my own lived experience, is reflected in what I'm seeing unfolding in the world today, she said. So while there's a lot of ugly stuff in the world, I'm also able to find a peace and just to see it from a bigger picture. It is this philosophy that has driven her support for the batteries. Every individual has the ability to look within and find their own integrity, this kernel of truth, and to live their lives in accordance with that, Miss Evans said. And to get back to the battery scheme, to me, that is a way of expressing that integrity in the world. Does the town realize they will be dealing with one of the most evilest corporations on the planet, BlackRock? It's a company, or it's a bunch of hedge fund managers that acquire just about every company on the planet, major company, and they sit on the board of opposing companies that are in competition. So try and work that one out. But it's actually a very dangerous company. So these people have no idea they're actually dealing with the devil himself. So she needs to really be careful. It says, to read on and finish the story, big batteries, our planet needs them. And it's got Anna Nazar, Nanskawen, 83, loves living in Patina, her home for 23 years. The former Melburnian, who volunteers in the town's restaurant and frequents the town's art events, is also one of Patina's leading advocates for the proposed batteries. I'm very glad to see major green developments because it's clear that our planet needs them urgently, she said. The floods and the fires are frightening. See, this is the interesting part about anything like Book of Revelations or anything, Nostradamus, anything that lays a blueprint for what might come. People can emulate it. Now, all these events you're seeing around the world, if people actually concentrated on what is happening with geoengineering, the way they are manipulating the weather, they're doing it on purpose. The idea is to say, oh no, we're actually helping the planet. They are manipulating the planet by spraying it with these sprays that have strontium and aluminum in it that actually damages the pH level in the soils, but also it blocks out the natural weather. And it actually blocks out the sun to create a greenhouse effect because it puts particles in the air. People don't realize, next time you see one of these things that people go, oh, that's a chemtrail or a contrail, it's not a water vapor because it stays there all day. It actually turns into a very faded cloud after you see the white streaks, like the planes leave the trail. Contrails disappear because they're water vapor. These things do not because they have chemicals in them, but they disperse and they actually look like a very large cloud once it's dispersed, depending on how much they spray it, and it will change the weather. You'll see the next day it will either rain, it'll be a different weather than what's supposed to be happening. And they say this all the time, oh, the climate change. Remember, it used to be global warming. Didn't work, people. They changed it to climate change. Why? Because they can manipulate the weather to bring in the floods, to bring in the rain. Weather weapons have been around since the Vietnam War, and probably before that, but not as well documented. But they did do this in Vietnam. They used weather weapons, which is to cloud seed the clouds to make it rain, to try and flood out the North Vietnamese that are in their tunnels. This actually happened, and it nearly worked. They have perfected it now. And we're not just the Americans, but all around the world, other countries, China, they use the same things. They want to flood someone out, they just change the weather. It's not incredibly difficult to do, but people don't believe it can be done. And so for that reason, they get away with it. So, yeah, the fires, well, we know that arson, as I reported on that story a week or so ago, arsonists, whether they're prodded to go and do it or whether they're just fire bugs, doesn't matter. Most of the bushfires you see in Australia are lit by arsonists. The rest are some natural ones with lightning. This does happen, but it used to happen before. Now it's happening more. Why? Well, that's your reason. So when they do this, it's like looking in the Book of Revelation and they see all the fires and floods coming. And you can almost see the globalists laughing amongst themselves going, oh, they took it, you know, hook, line and sinker. Because if they can emulate what people think of the end times, they're going to get people to do whatever they want. Now, not a lot of devout Christians, because they'll sit around waiting for the rapture. They won't believe anybody. But I'm telling you, a lot of this stuff is orchestrated. It's orchestrated for a reason, so they can get control of the world population and start to deplete it. Okay? Best way they do it, take your energy off you. Make you dependent on them. Get rid of cash. You're tied to the banks. They own the banks. So the bottom line is, what are you going to do from that point? You've got to eat. Well, guess what? You've lost the skills because the duopoly of the supermarkets has taken that skill away from you. You can't even go and farm anyway because nobody knows how to do it anyway these days. You roll back to the 1920s, 90% of people could farm, 10% couldn't. Now, 90% of people can't farm and 10% can. That's the reality of the world today. So that's where they've got us, and they know that. That's why they want you relying on renewables, because they know they can control that market as well by reducing energy and playing one people off the other, and also keeping the prices so high that you'll never be able to challenge the status quo simply because you won't be able to afford to. That I'll get into the universal basic income another day, but that's a scheme that is definitely coming, where they want you to be paid for doing nothing and everyone will love it, but you'll be at their beck and call. They will own you like an object. You know, this is the whole point of a universal basic income, is you're part of a system that you've now become an object in the system. And with the QR coding, you will eventually get your digital ID. And that'll be your number from birth to death. That's how it's going to work, people. No more passwords. It'll just be your digital ID online anywhere, and you'll be scrutinized for everything you think, do, or say. Total control, people. That's all they want. It's not much to ask for. So you can see this Patina town in Tasmania is a... they're going to be used as an example for regional areas to give up their energy sources so they can get rid of the attachment to the original source, which was coal, and go into the globalists under their wing. Because that's who BlackRock are. They're part of the globalist agenda. So anyone that signs up to them, well, they've just signed on the Satan's dotted line. But they don't know it yet. And that's the sad part. Anyway, going back to the other story, the toxic waste one. One sec. So it says, going back to the toxic waste story called Not In My Backyard. It's got developers Telus Holdings said the Chandler project would be the first underground salt mine and deep geological waste repository of its kind in Australia. It says the proposed facility will be built within a 500 million year old salt bed on the Maryvale Station, 25 kilometres southwest of the remote Aboriginal community of Tidjakala. It says the project has been given approval to receive up to 400,000 tonnes of per annum of hazardous material over 25 years from both Australia and strategic Pacific partners overseas. So that's how they're going to start the ball. Talk about neighbours and, you know, do it from them, and then they'll extend it. But this is how they started. Anyway, it says this would include low-level radioactive waste and naturally occurring radioactive material. So they're telling you it's low level at this stage. Telus said the waste would be stored in an underground vault about 850 metres below the surface within the vast salt bed. It says the scale of this project is unlike anything else being built in the world, particularly how remote it is, Chief Executive Nate Smith said. The unique part about Chandler is the geology. It is an extremely deep, stable, thick bed of salt, which is perfect to create that scientific natural halt to make sure that waste is permanently isolated. It says last week, native title holders gathered to vote in favour of the project, with many hoping it would bring a much-needed economic boost to their communities. Some of the older people think it's dangerous, but I think it would be better to go ahead, native title holder Reggie Kenny said. Well, if you've got BlackRock in there, people, there bags of gold passed around all over the place. It says the salt, nothing going to come out of it once they put it in there. So, and it's got waste already exists in the Northern Territory. Mr. Smith said that the low-level radioactive material would include medical waste, X-ray imaging and cancer treatment, as well as rare earth processing and water treatments. It says it's in hospital basements. It's sitting on the sides of curbs. It's sitting in on a remediated mine site, he said. The question is, does it continue to sit in places where it can harm waterways in the community, or does it go to the truly one of the safest places on the planet? So the door's open, people. So it says, while Telus would not confirm a dollar figure, Mr. Smith said that the construction of Chandler would likely be up to 10 times the cost of Sandy Ridge, an open-cut mine and hazardous waste storage site developed by Telus in Western Australia. He said this made it essential for the Chandler facility to accept waste from overseas, or as there was no way the domestic market could support the cost. And it's got concerns about water supply. I thought there was no problem with the water supply. He says despite widespread support, some native title holders like the Tidjakala, I think that's it, resident Elaine Schilling, were concerned the facility could impact local water sources. Not good. It's going to affect us, all of us, she said. Well, what she needs to know is that there's PFAS in the water anyway, and no one can do anything about that at the moment. So she'd be affected. We're affected here. Everyone is. Unless you've got reverse osmosis. Get out and get your machine now, people, before the prices triple, because they will. Anyway, getting back to the story, bit of a sell there, but I'm not really selling a product. I'm just telling you to get something that you need. No brand names included. So it says, she says, we're just worried about the water because we've got a lot of kids, a new generation. I don't know what's going to happen. But Mr. Smith claimed there was nothing to worry about, as the vault would sit about 500 metres below the lowest known aquifer. TELUS is also required to provide the EPA with an independent peer-reviewed water management plan before any approval of decisions are made on the project. There is so much money being passed around people, it's definitely going to happen. Just to finish up, it says, however, the Australian Conservation Foundation nuclear analyst Dave Sweeney said the project had serious implications and required a high level of scrutiny and testing. Low-level waste does not necessarily mean low-level risk, he said. Some low-level waste has short activity and dangerous periods, but some require isolation from people and the wider environment for 300 years. They put a timeline on it. Mr. Sweeney said he was concerned about the potential for future project creep and the extension of materials deemed acceptable in any future facility around the Chandler project. See, the project creep means it'll expand. It'll include probably European countries, American countries. Who knows? Whoever wants to dump their stuff on our doorstep, well, they'll have a facility to do it at. And it says, claims the facility will transform communities. For more than a decade, the Central Land Council has been facilitating consultation between TELUS and native title holders about the Chandler project. Long time, people. CLC Chief Executive Les Turner said the project was initially proposed solely on a salt mine, but had gradually changed over the years into a toxic wasteland. We commissioned independent advice on the radioactive waste component, and a lot of that's been provided to the native title holders, and overall, the authorization was provided, he said. So the bag of gold was just too big to refuse people. Now, the story goes on for a little bit, but I didn't want to jump too far ahead. But at the bottom, it says, many native title holders like Mr. Kenny hope the project would have lasting impacts for local Aboriginal communities. This mob has given us the time to think and do everything, and that's what we want, and they want, he said. We want it to go ahead. And so I've put links to the story to do with TELUS. It says TELUS successfully completes $135 million debt refinancing. So that's TELUS Holdings. There's a link to the company, so you want to see who they are. Then you've got a hazardous waste removal and storage, TELUS Holdings, another link. And then TELUS Holdings, the company profile, because they're the mob that's going to be looking after it, telling these people, these poor people in that area, it's going to be fine. Nobody else lives there except you. I mean, this is basically what they're doing. They've always been looking for a remote community to dump the waste, and now they've found it. So I'll have to keep reporting on it and keep watching what happens. As the whole renewable energy thing starts to collapse, they'll start looking at nuclear energy without a doubt. Okay, now I'm going to talk about the COVID rats of Oz. One of them just died recently. They're off the hook. Not really in name, they're not, but in the physical, yes. Her name was Mary Louise McClaws. Now, I did a meme on her where I turned the hands into giant claws for obvious reason. But she was a very big finger pointer during the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, she was part of, I'll just see which part of Australia she was doing the pointing, because I'm pretty sure it was in New South Wales, but she's a Tasmanian. So just let me just see if I can get the stories up. One sec. No, it seems she was only born there. She's actually was at the University of New South Wales for something like, where is it? I think 30 years. So just a regular there, I'd say, but definitely New South Wales. So it's got, I'm not going to go into the history and all that sort of thing, but I'll just go into the pandemic and see what happened. It says, in 2004, McClaws was sent to Beijing for 2 months to monitor bird flu for the World Health Organization. It says she also consulted with Hong Kong's authorities during the 2002 SARS outbreak. Talk about walking straight into it, straight on the Wikipedia. It says her early research also included the 1995 study of AIDS in Australia. So she's totally part of the agenda. Absolutely. Hook, line and sinker. Very easily to spot on that one. And then it says, McClaws became widely known to Australian public through her media appearances during the COVID-19 pandemic in Australia. She was one of the first public advocates for mandatory face masks and the closure of the Australian border. She later advocated for mandatory vaccination, including the establishment of vaccination hubs to achieve herd immunity. And it says in 2021, she was named Australian by the Australian Financial Review as one of the 10 most culturally powerful people in Australia during that year. So there you go. And apparently she was diagnosed with brain cancer in 2022 and then died in August 2023 at the age of 70. So soul to soul, and too bad. But one of the worst at the time in New South Wales, now that I recall, for finger pointing. That's why I called her McClaws. I mean, the meme, she had giant hands like Nosferatu, the new movie that's coming out of the original Dracula. So moving to the next story, it's got... Now, actually, I did do a story on her. I'll just see if I can find it, because I've already done a whole lot on her once before, but I'm just trying to figure out when I did it. So I'm just looking at the date here to see when I actually put this story out on her, which was titled From Birth to Death, Enter the Human Pin Cushions. This is to do with the jabbing people, and it was forced upon everybody. One sec. Okay, so the story looks like it's from November the 13th, 2021. This is the one that I just said, From Birth to Death, Enter the Human Pin Cushions. And I put a caption in way back then in the middle of the pandemonium. It says, you were warned once that when you're on the jabster wheel, you won't be allowed off. And it says, check out epidemiologist Mary Louise McClaws, who says, and what I've done is in the epidemiologist, the word demon has been written in red because those five letters are inside epidemiologist. Surprise, surprise. And then it's got that mean meme with the big fingers like Freddy Krueger, and also a bit like the new Nosferatu, the new Dracula movie coming out. And it says, so she says, booster shot data from countries like Israel was so far encouraging. Then it goes on to mention the CEO of Pfizer, Albert Bourla. And it says he received $21 million in compensation from Pfizer in 2020. It says he engages often with business leaders such as Bill Gates. Surprise, surprise. That's right, all people. From birth to death, you and your kids, in a medical experiment by Big Pharma and the elite major shareholders forever. It says because they really care about the masses. And it says also, no natural herd immunity or remedies allowed. It's got ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. It says just take Pfizer, Moderna and the AstraZeneca COVID shots, okay? All rebranded with new names, of course. And it goes through the names are... the Comirnaty, which is the Pfizer, and then you've got Spikevax, which is Moderna, and the AstraZeneca, which is, I've got that around the wrong way, which is Vaxzeria. And it says, just like Alphabet, which is now Google, don't be evil. And I've got, ha ha. And then it's got Meta, and it's got Face Crook. I like that one, Face Crook. I haven't heard that one before, but that. And so there's a sort of another mean meme of Mark Zuckerberg as Augustus Zucculus, which is like a... one of the senators or one of the Caesars of ancient Rome, because he's starting to resemble one, isn't he, Fable? So then it's got the going on with the shot. Just see if I can find it, if this next story is actually, yes, it is. It's attached to her. It's another one that says four COVID-19 vaccine jabs. It's not unusual once you understand how booster shots work. And that was the 13th of November, 2021. So I'm not going to go through the whole story, but I'll just go through the bits I've highlighted. It says, a year from now, being fully vaccinated may not be good enough for some jurisdictions. It said, a leading epidemiologist says, Australians will need a third and even a fourth dose of the COVID-19 vaccine as the country enters the next phase of the pandemic. So this is the thing she was pushing. The warning comes despite more than 80% of people aged 16 and over being fully vaccinated with two doses. Remember when this was all happening back then, a couple of years ago? It says the experts have warned being fully vaccinated may not be good enough next year, as the iterations of the virus inevitably emerge, and some freedoms, remember this people, such as entry into certain countries, may require proof of additional doses. Remember when all this was going around, everyone was panicking about flying anywhere in the world because every country had different reasons. I mean, I couldn't go to Fiji at the time, people, this is way back, because they had restrictions on people that weren't jabbed. And this is it. So you had to wait till countries lifted their veil of vaccine conformity to be able to travel anywhere. And it says here, here's what you need to know about getting a booster shot. And it says, what is a booster shot? This is back in November 2021. Anyone who has had two doses of the COVID-19 vaccine is considered fully vaccinated in Australia. Remember that, people? A booster shot is effectively another dose of the vaccine, but it does, this is in red, but it does not add extra protection. Rather, it replenishes the immunity profile, which will naturally wane over time. This is before Omicron hit them, and they realized there was nothing they could do from that point. And it says, this isn't a novel concept. Booster shots for tetanus or whooping cough are administered regularly. It says, regardless of which vaccine you've received, such as Pfizer or AstraZeneca, having both doses will significantly reduce your chance to contract, listen to this bit, spread or fall seriously ill from the virus. All wrong, people. It says, why is it important to get a booster shot? And this is when she comes into it. It says, the antibodies your body produces will decline over time, according to epidemiologist Mary Louise McClaws. It says, from the time you've had your second dose, your immune system responds really well and you're on top of your immune response level, Professor McClaw said. And it says, the epidemiologist said booster shot data from countries like Israel was very encouraging. And that's obviously a repeat from before. She said early research showed a booster shot would be required at about the six-month mark, sooner depending on which vaccine you've taken. And it says because AstraZeneca has a lower overall effectiveness than Pfizer, I think it's more about the blood clots, about 15% more difference, the recommended time for a booster shot would come earlier for the former. And then it goes on to name who should get the shot. And are booster shots mandatory? Booster shots are not mandatory anywhere in the world, but Professor McClaws foresees countries imposing travel restrictions on people without booster shots. Booster shots. She says, I can see it will happen absolutely, which actually it didn't. She pointed to the successful administration of booster shots for the elderly in Israel. So she keeps focusing on Israel and said, as data from the booster programs continue to emerge, particularly from the US, it would likely change the framework for COVID responses. They've started rolling it out when they start seeing the impact on reducing infection transmission. Isn't that a key word, people? When they realize they couldn't stop Omicron. And it says, that's if there was even a virus at all. It makes you start wondering, they could just say all this happened. People got a general flu or they actually got something like a COVID-19, but it didn't go around and kill everyone. It was just like a flu. And it did kill elderly people, and so does the flu. So it's very easy to get the waters muddied to sort of trick people into thinking there was a brand new scary virus thing that's going to kill everybody. I mean, that's what people thought. They thought this thing was going to kill everybody. Then they started really realizing, oh, it's not really killing young people. Although later on, yes, it did. And that's not the the virus. That's the actual vaccine. So they now they're not getting away with it now. People have actually had enough, and they don't even want to get the booster shots. So this shot every 6 months that she said you should get, long gone, people. Some people fell for it, but the majority are moving on now. All right. And it says, to finish up, it says health authorities have not indicated booster shot programs beyond the third dose. But New South Wales Health said it's still early days. So interesting reading all this retro stuff, people, about what happened a few years back and how different it is now, isn't it? And it's got experts all over the world are tracking and researching the COVID-19 virus to better understand how long the vaccine will provide protection against COVID-19, New South Wales Health said on its website. This evidence will help to inform whether future boost shots will be needed in the future. Professor McClaw said a fourth shot would likely be needed down the line until vaccine researchers develop a jab which is resilient to the new strains. Never happened, people. He says we're getting the third shot because of the Delta. And as variants of concern emerge, they're not going to be less infectious. They're going to be even more infectious because they're going to have experience battling our immune system. Professor McClaw said she's full of our goodwill, isn't she, people? She said, however, it was unlikely the fourth shot will be required within 6 months of the third. Oh, gosh, that's optimistic. Professor McClaw said a lot of countries will still be learning a lot, and nations will share invaluable health data. Yes, like lockdowns and masks and social distancing and quarantining. Yeah, that's great, isn't it? And to finish off, it says there are countries that are very kindly shared with us their full experiences, the good and the bad. Well, what about the adverse reactions and the mortality rate, the comorbidities? Never happened, people. That was all shut down. How about when they wanted to give different types of cures, not cures, but, you know, like ways to sort of battle the virus that wasn't major pharmaceutical companies making billions of dollars out of the public? No, that wasn't allowed either. So these are the sort of gatekeepers that were putting in control of this whole mess at the time, and now they've all done runners. Well, she hasn't quite done a runner. She sort of, the final solution for her was exit stage left permanently. So we're getting up to that. So the next story is, now we're actually up to date. So now we know what happened, because this is recent. So I'm not going to go through the whole history of some of these people. Some of them had an impact, but they don't really deserve to have a full, open book on their whole life. So in this case, it was a shorter one, that's right. But that's all right. It means some of these people get a longer run at it on the podcast and some don't. And this is one that doesn't. So it says Mary Louise McClaws, it's actually McClaws, I've been saying McClaws for obvious reason, became epidemiologist who helped guide Australia through the pandemic, dies age 70 from a brain tumour. And it's got, in the darkest days of the pandemic, when people didn't know whether to wash the canned goods they brought from home from the supermarket or buy a gas mask so they could face a safely exercise for 1 hour a day, epidemiologist and infection control expert Professor Mary Louise McClaws, or McClaws I should say, became the most trusted, compassionate and calming voice of reason in the lives of many Australians. So this is going on about the great thing she did and how, because this is the report on after she's gone, so they're going to give her all the glowing lights, all the best pictures, and that's exactly what they've done in the article, and it's quite a big article. So they are really giving the thumbs up. What a great person. So I'm not going to, there's no point in me going on in, that story is actually ridiculously long now that I look at it. And it's got her legacy will not only be a major work she did in the evidence-based research to control and limit the spread of disease and infection in this region and around the world, but in the words of her friend, Professor Richmond, it will be decades she spent translating science from her research into her teaching and in guiding communities in safe public health practices. So there you go. It's just like, it's going to be painted as a saint. But in my book, no, quite the opposite. Epidemiologist in my book. Okay, next story. And it's pretty much the same story. That last one, by the way, too, was obviously from abc.net.au and came out on August the 13th, 2023. The next story is pretty much the same thing. SBS News, it's sbs.com.au, Mary Louise McClaws. Epidemiologist who led Australia through COVID dies at 70. And you're thinking to yourself, okay, it was a brain tumour. Now, I can tell you something now, people, what is actually happening out there. There, as I said with the last, I let that last video play, apparently there's a link to a longer version of something similar to that. It was some of the same people that were interviewed in that 17 million people have died from the vaccine in the pandemic. Because it's tied to comorbidities. People that were already sick took the jab and then it killed them. And people go, oh, no, it was COVID. No, that was supposed to stop COVID. Why has the death rate gone through the roof? oh, that's because of COVID. No, the vaccine was supposed to stop that. So straight away you realize, and it wasn't about Omicron. This is when the vaccine started. And they've correlated that the people that did the 17 million deaths worldwide from the vaccines actually correlated meticulously when all the vaccine doses were given at certain times all around the world. And you can see the graph of the core morbidities rising exactly when the vaccines were administered. So you can actually see on the chart all around the world, all these different countries, where they have meticulously gone through the data to see when vaccines were first administered on mass scale, and then they looked at the core morbidities for those months and years around that time and saw the chart rise with the amount of people that were vaccinated to the amount of people that died with comorbidities. These are people that have already got something wrong with them. Now I'm wondering if Professor McClaws, or who had a comorbidity, has fallen into the same trap. And that's all I'm saying. So a lot of people are going to think, well, it's a heart failure, or it's a brain tumor, or it's this, but these things are actually directly related to the vaccinations. And a lot of people just don't get it. But when they see the data that's coming out now all around the world, not just in Canada, but in New Zealand, in the UK, it's coming out where they're now realizing that it's not COVID-19 that was killing people, it was actually the vaccines. So then you start to think, why would they do that? And then you wonder why I'm doing the podcast. Now, I was trying to dig a bit deeper just on her to see who her husband was, to see if there was any connection, to Gates or whoever. And it said that the husband's name was Richard Fluke, and they had two children from memory. This is on the 15th of August, 2023, from thesun.co.uk. And it's got Mary Louise McClaws' husband, Richard, has confirmed she has tragically passed away. A key figure in Australia's battle against COVID-19. It says, this is all you need to know about Mary Louise and her husband. So it's a bit of a piece just on personal sort of information. And I did want to find that. That's what I was looking for. So it said, Mary Louise McClaws and her husband, Richard Fluke, got married in 1988. And we're thinking, I don't really care about that. They have two children. It said she passed away with cancer. And it said Richard announced she died on Saturday, August the 12th, 2023 at the Walper Hospital in Sydney's Woollahra, stating, "Our dear Mary Louise passed away in her sleep." It says Mary Louise was a professor of epidemiology who had worked for the WHO. She dedicated her career to the prevention of disease as well. That's probably true in the beginning. And it says she also led Australia through the COVID-19 pandemic. And then it goes on about how she supported border closures, enforcement of face masks. And it says, however, Mary Louise has been on leave from the University of New South Wales since January 2022 when she was diagnosed with a brain cancer. It says she has the Order of Australia and have recognised her distinguished service to medical research, particularly epidemiology and infection prevention. Now, the interesting part about that is COVID-19 was the transmission increased with the variants. It did not slow down with the vaccine. It increased, and they increased the booster shots, which did absolutely nothing. Okay. And that's why people gave up. All right. And they stopped getting the boosters because they realized what was the point. It was just making money for huge pharmaceutical companies, which exactly was the plan from day one. So it just faded into the background, but still people are already being jabbed up and the risk is still there. Okay. My concern is what Bill Gates said, where he said a pandemic 2 is coming. That actually scared me. I thought this is very dangerous because that's really just a blueprint for what he and other globalists are planning for the next one. So I hope he doesn't get his way, people. If enough people stand up and say enough's enough, they're not going to get their way. So you can see that they're trying to do it through a released biological weapon so people can't blame anyone. Because in the original days of the pandemic with the when it came from Wuhan in China, people were calling it the Wuhan flu, you know, and China flu, and it was the Chinese fault. That was the consensus in the beginning. They needed someone to blame. And now it's obviously shifted to the people that paid for it and the people that forced it onto everybody, which is why I expose these people. Regardless of what their stature in the population is in the countries they are, it means nothing. Because there is some point in some people's career where they have to cross that line. to the dark side. And that's what a lot of these ones have done. That's as simple as that. They received their bags of gold and they did the bidding. Okay, moving on. Okay, the next cab off the rank is Yvette Darth. Now, a lot of people remember her in the pandemic as also a finger pointer for Queensland. So she was a Palaszczuk sort of stooge back in the day as the Attorney General, and then sort of got the boot and is now back in the job. So we already know what's happened with her, but let's see her legacy, shall we? abc.net.au came out on the 22nd of February, and note the date, 2021. So we're getting smack in the middle of it. And it's got COVID-19 vaccine rollout begins in Queensland as nurses, police inspectors receive first jabs on the Gold Coast. Remember that when everyone was smiling because they were getting jabbed to save everybody, doing the right thing, remember all that? It says a nurse who works on the Gold Coast University Hospital COVID-19 ward was the first person in Queensland to receive the coronavirus vaccine today. Nurse Zoo Park is among 180 recipients to receive the vaccine, along with Queensland Police Inspector Owen Hortz, who is a commander in the Gold Coast quarantine hotels. He's like a prison warden. Then it goes on to say, I hardly felt it. It felt like the flu shot hurt a lot more, Miss Park said. It's a really exciting time for all healthcare workers and Queensland. It says, Miss Park said she felt safer going to work now having received the vaccination. You know, I've seen families be torn apart from it. It's really sad what it's done to the patients and affected and the families, Miss Park said. Oh, yeah. It's really scary for healthcare workers to be going home and potentially exposing their families to that as well. So this vaccine rollout is very exciting. So that's how this article starts. And as it traverses through, then we get to Yvette Darth and what her role in all of this was, because this is the beginning of it. This is where people lined up to do the right thing. Then it goes on to say in the article, thousands to be vaccinated in coming weeks. It's got Health Minister Yvette Darth said that the vaccine was a new weapon in the fight against COVID-19. I had to put that in. It says COVID will be here for a long time, but it's how do we live with it? How do we make sure anyone who gets COVID doesn't get seriously ill and end up in the ICU? Miss Darth said. It's so funny because it's actually spelt Darth like D-A-T-H, but there's a bit of a comma in between the D and the A, and you think that comma could be an E. And you've got Miss Death. It says, this is the answer, she says. We have 5 million Queenslanders here, and if we want to keep 5 million Queenslanders safe, we need to get you vaccinated. And then Commander Darth moved on to say that thousands of vaccine doses will be touching down in Queensland, with more than 1,000 people are set to receive the needle in the first week. It says 125,000 people in total will be vaccinated under Category 1A, which covers health workers, border staff and hotel quarantine staff. Miss Darth said the rollout would begin at the Princess Alexandra Hospital in Brisbane on Wednesday and at the Cairns Hospital on Friday. Next week, the rollout will extend to the Royal Brisbane and Women's Hospital, the Sunshine Coast University Hospital and Townsville University Hospital, Commander Death said. Yvette Darth. Gold Coast University Hospital Director of Infectious Diseases, Dr. John Gerard, and he's also one of the people, I'll be talking about him too, told ABC Radio Brisbane the rest of the population will be vaccinated as soon as possible. And it says, he says, my experience is there are thousands of people who want it. There are people knocking on the door every day to say, when am I going to get my vaccine? So we are doing whatever we can to get it and efficiently as possible, Dr. Gerard said. So he's on the list. No worry, I'll be doing him. And also in this article, it mentions Dr. Jeanette Young. And it's got a picture of when I put the article up, it's got her rubbing her hands behind people standing in front of it. And I don't think there's much more on her. It's quite a long article, but it was just a snippet there where she pops in to take control, Commander Darth. A bit like, I could call it Darth Vader, really, couldn't I? That would be a bit of a twist. So moving on to the next story, which is fairly significant. abc.net.au came out on the 21st of November 2021. Queensland Health Minister Yvette Darth says she received death threats over the government's COVID-19 position. Well, there you go, people, straight into it. It says Queensland Health Minister Yvette Darth has revealed she and fellow Labor MPs have been subjected to threatening emails. The minister was speaking at a press conference at a school in Murrayfield, north of Brisbane, on Sunday morning, where she was accompanied by security. She praised Queenslanders for continuing to get the COVID jab, saying while the state had passed another 24 hours with no new cases, there were 14,992 vaccinations delivered on Saturday. The minister's revelation came a day after Queensland Labor MP Brittany Lauger said she had received a threatening email following the government's policy to ban the unvaccinated from hospitality, entertainment and health venues once the state reaches an 80% double dose vaccination rate. Ms. Death Darth insists she still feels safe in her role. We have an amazing police service who do a terrific job in the state, and also nothing's going to stop me doing my job. See, you can't see this person too verbal. It says, nothing's going to stop me doing my job. I love what I do, and my role is extremely important. So there's a Commander Death in control that actually enjoys pointing the crooked finger at all the people, because, you know, they're all the plebs that aren't doing as they're told, especially the unvaccinated. She says, I consider it a privilege and an honour to do my job, and I'm going to get on with it. But she did voice concern about some of the threats being made to public figures across Australia. So they're all confident. It says, I do think that people need to be very clear in their language to be not inciting or encouraging this kind of behaviour. So she's already putting on the black cloak as, you know, Darth Vader, Commander Darth Vader. Police Minister Mark Wine, who accompanied Ms. Darth to the daily COVID media update, said there had been an escalation in the intensity of threats. There is a small cohort, it's always a small cohort of people, I think, who are trying to hijack quite legitimate protest activity, Mr. Ryan said. Thousands of people rallied across Queensland on Saturday as part of Freedom Day rallies. Remember them, people? In one video circulating online, a man could be heard saying, hang the bee, in reference to Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk. Well, they said the same to Daniel Andrews. They wanted to hang him as well. They even made an effigy with the hangman's noose at the protests as well. So it says, Mr. Ryan said protest organisers had a responsibility to monitor the behaviour of those attending their events. You've also got a responsibility to the broader community to ensure those people who are attending to hijack your democratic process don't use what you want to do for lawful purpose for something that could quite seriously escalate into something very concerning. See, they wanted to make sure that everyone was tarred with the same anti-vaccination brush so that everyone thought that you were doing a bad thing. So it says Queensland's school vaccination blitz is continuing with 100 schools hosting pop-up clinics this weekend. Can you remember when this was all happening, people? And then they wanted to jab the six-month-old babies. They would have just jabbed anyone walking past if they could, because they made dollars out of it. Every time someone was jabbed, another ka-ching in the till. So this was the most evil thing that could have happened in this country at the time, and everyone got duped. And done by the prostitute media, who said, do it for your fellow person. Do the right thing. They did the Aussie sort of help your mate thing. But in actual fact, what it's done, it's actually marked the population. People that had the shot and now people that did not. And the tables are slowly turning, people. As the data comes out, people are starting to get angry. These are the people that are jabbed, getting angry because they know now what has happened. Their lives have been shortened. And they don't like that. And as more and more as they hear of this data popping up, people will start to think. It's being blocked all over the place. Obviously, Google, YouTube, they're going to block like crazy any of this stuff because they're part of the problem, you see? Anyway, so I don't think I'll read anything more on that article, so I'll move on to the next one. So this came out in cairnsnews.org. This is an interesting one, January the 5th, 2022. So we're moving into the next year. Queensland Health Minister forcibly jabbing Aborigines? And it's got to be question mark. So I'm thinking, okay, hang on, let me just read the article. It says, who is Queensland Health Minister Yvette Darth referring to when she talks about those teams who knock on people's doors and vaccinate, whoever is eligible to be vaccinated? Was she referring to the coercive visits to Aboriginal communities by government vaccination teams backed up by the army? I do remember when this happened. Is she suggesting that forcible vaccination was somehow okay for them and okay for the rest of the population because that's what we have to do? How many members of those Aboriginal communities suffered injury or death following vaccination? Like Bevan Costello, the elder from Cherbourg, who died 6 days after getting his much publicised jab. And I do remember that. This is a guy that stood up and said, oh, come on, do the right thing and follow my lead. And 6 days later, he was dead. Forcible medical treatment without consent is a criminal act. It's actually assault to force a needle into someone's body without their consent. As stated by the Australian Law Reform Commission, it's part of the law of trespass. Under the law of trespass, patients have a right not to be subjected to an invasive procedure without consent or other lawful jurisdiction or justification, such as emergency or necessity. See, hospitals at the moment, two people, if you have to go into surgery, they actually will coerce you into getting the COVID jab. Not because they're trying to meet any agenda. Most of them don't know why they're doing it, but also they're doing it to keep their staff safe because they think it still works. It's a bit like being better than the hospital up the road because you're doing that. It's a bit like when they say there are no preservatives added to a certain food thing when there were never any preservatives in the first place in it. They just say it so that it looks better. That's what was happening. And even recently I saw an article that said, and it was actually a hospital document that said, you know, telling the people that work in the hospital that really we should be coercing these people into getting the jab if they're having surgery. And I just went, whoa, that's really bad. I don't like that. Because, you know, if you're knocked out, they can't go and jab COVID-19 vaccines into you. That's fully illegal. So that's basically what they're saying here. It's an invasive procedure that you'd never consented to. But they're sort of saying they want you to get it so that you are protecting the staff there. As they have always said in the pandemic, when you get jabbed, it's to protect others. So it says, finish off the article, it says, to suggest that teams are going to go from door to door forcibly injecting households is a threat of property invasion and violence against Queensland families, and this minister must be made accountable for that statement. It says, calling the COVID-19 outbreak an emergency is not justifiable, especially with a death rate of less than 1% of those infected, and deaths with mostly occur with comorbidities and or old age. There it is. I mean, this is way back then, and they were on top of it, because that's exactly what has happened. So that was cairnsnews.org. So that was a good one. I actually agree that there was possibly some sort of coercion as they went door-to-door jabbing all the Aboriginals. Unbelievable. Next article, 20th of April 2022, abc.net.au. Queensland health authorities hint at possible easing of COVID-19 quarantine rules for close contacts. See, they whittled it down bit by bit. I remember when unvaccinated couldn't go anywhere because I was one of them. You couldn't go anywhere, people. You couldn't go to a restaurant. You just couldn't go anywhere. You were like a leper amongst the population, and you were marked for it too. So it says Queensland Health Minister Yvette Darth has flagged, I think I've been saying it wrong. It's a Y-V-E-T-T-E. I think it's Yvette. I'm going to stay Yvette. And Darth does sound like death. So Yvette Death is probably closer to the truth anyway. So it says Yvette Darth has flagged quarantine requirements for close contacts of COVID-19 cases. And it could be scrapped after the state passes the peak of its Omicron wave. So remember when that came and they all realised the cat was out of the bag. The Omicron cat. Mrs. Darr said she would meet with Chief Health Officer John Gerard this afternoon after Victoria and New South Wales announced similar moves. What I want to hear from the chief health officer is how he's feeling about the pressures on the health system, she said. Obviously, we know lifting close contacts will help as far as getting more people back to work, both in the health system and in the broader community, and help businesses and the economy, which is something they should have done from the beginning. But we also need to balance that with the fact that when you allow more people who are living in a household with a positive case out in the community, we will see an increase in positive cases. So that is a given. And everyone needs to be prepared for that when there are changes to the close contact rules. So this is where they're starting to ease it, because they knew that it wasn't going to work anymore. So it says currently, those who have spent more than 4 hours with a COVID-19 case in a household, care facility or similar setting must quarantine for 7 days. Close contacts must take a rapid antigen test or a PCR test on day 6 and return a negative result to leave quarantine. I can't read anymore, people. It's just, you can see now that they realised the transmission, the vaccine was not stopping it anymore, and they had no answer to it because they were wrong from day one. Okay, this was nuts. We should have been allowed to have natural herd immunity, and we should have been allowed to take other measures apart from what we were forced to do, because in the end, that's what it was. Businesses were forced to use this mandatory vaccination through a business or you lose your job. That's how they did it, people. The government wiped their hands and they threw it back in our faces, and that's what's happened. So they can't be blamed in the future when people start dropping dead. They will get blamed, but that's why I'm doing what I'm doing right now, people. And so it just goes on to say how many people have caught it, and it's going on, and keep doing the rat tests. I don't think there's anything more with her in it, so I'm not going to read it anymore, and that's correct. Moving on to the next article. It's cairnsnews.org, and it looks like it's the same story again. It is the same story, exactly. Actually, looking at the story again, you've got to see the picture of it they put into the story. It's just, it's when I put it up. And by the way, I haven't put any of these stories up just yet, simply because I'm going to put them up probably in their state order. So I'll do like New South Wales first, and I'll do all the people involved in the jab for New South Wales. And we're talking in politics and also in the health department. Put them up first, plus other people that are involved. There are other players. I don't want to leave them all out, but I've got to be very careful because the list is getting a very long, people. And it's going to take me the whole of 2024 to get through it, and I do not want to do that. So I will do them in state and territory order, and put them up like that. And then eventually we'll collate them all into one place to go and look at them all. So it's going to be a bit like that. I was hoping to do like headshots of all of them, like in a big giant class photo, and just dump the headshots onto some old class photo from the 60s or something, a black and white one, and then do it like that. And then you could click on the head and it would take you to a different page and the whole thing. And I still may do that. But I'm starting to think now that's very, very time consuming. And the website WordPress is not really set up to do bells and whistles like that. So I'm thinking it might end up just being links to a page. And then maybe there might be a list of them on, a bit like the way I did the executive board members of the WHO. Sort of similar to that. Because that's going to be an easier way to look at it as well, rather than go off to different pages all the time. And simply because you've clicked on one of the globalists. Lackey's heads. Didn't want to have to get caught up in making it too elaborate. Just sort of making sure all the information I said is documented. That's really it. And also to keep it on the widget bar of conspiracyhealth.com to be referenced indefinitely. Okay, so moving on to the next one, since that was a repeat. This one's actually, this is really interesting, this one, people. It's from Deb Frecklington. .com.au. Now, she's the member for Nanango. So it's obviously something to do with Yvette Darth, because I tell you why. 22nd of November 2022, debfrecklington.com.au, it says, and she's obviously a member of a political party there. It says, Yvette Darth must be sacked. That's the headline. And it's got a statement by Shadow Health Minister, Minister for Health, Ros Bates. So that's what it says here. So this is actually under her website, but this is the person that's actually saying it, which is Ros Bates. The embattled health minister must be held accountable for the failings at Mackay Hospital. The timing of the announcement regarding Mackay Hospital adds more fuel to the integrity crisis and proves the Palaszczuk government has not learnt from the Coldrake, it looks like the Coldrake review. The timing of the announcement is dripping in arrogance. Despite having show cause notices for weeks, yesterday Yvette Darth rushed through an extraordinary meeting with the governor on the very same day the failings of the Palaszczuk government were exposed in another damning report. In a feeble attempt to break a media cycle, the health minister puts out a media release at 6:30 a.m. the very next day. This announcement could have been made at any other time, but the Palaszczuk government chose that very moment. It's calculated and underhanded. Victims of domestic and family violence and the mothers of Mackay are the ones who lose when the government has no interest in letting the sun shine in on critical issues we must repair. It says the health minister cannot escape responsibility for what has happened at Mackay Hospital and her atrocious handling of the situation, which she refused to acknowledge for so long. So I'm not sure what the incident was, but they're saying the health minister must be sacked. The opposition was sounding the alarm after Mackay Hospital for more than a year before the health minister showed any interest. And it says the health minister cannot escape responsibility for what happened at Mackay Hospital and her atrocious handling of the situation that she refused to acknowledge for so long. If the Premier values transparency and believes in accountability, then there's no way the health minister can keep her job. But she did. And she went on to get promoted, people. She sort of, when they had the minister reshuffle, when Palaszczuk was given the flick, Yvette Darth was also not chosen to go on. Okay? That was because of the reshuffle. But then she got a job back. So we'll get to that. And she, you know, more or less got the same job back. Nothing changed. So this is why, you know, doesn't matter what people say. It's the result of what job they got after the pandemic or where they are now. And that's what I'm trying to figure out here. So I'm not going to read the rest of it, but it's said it four or five times in that she must be sacked. Now, this is the next article. Skynews.com.au, 17th of May, 2023. It says the Queensland Premier is set to announce this week a number of changes to her cabinet as the government faces criticism for three issues impacting the state. It says a senior minister in the Palaszczuk government is set to lose her portfolio in a major reshuffle to the cabinet ahead of the 2024 Queensland election. Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk is tipped to announce this week that Yvette Darth will be moved from health minister to her former attorney general position. The speculation is it will be revealed as soon as Thursday amid frustration in Queensland over the three major talking points of health, housing and youth justice. Sunshine State residents have identified those as the biggest issues that need to be fixed, with the government's rental cap, ambulance ramping and maternity crisis and the rising youth crime just some issues under the spotlight. It says Ms. Palaszczuk has been under pressure in recent months to make changes to the portfolio following scandals within the health sector. The Premier is believed to have held a meeting with Ms. Darth on Tuesday, just hours before the incumbent health minister was due to front a press conference. She was scheduled to speak to the media sometime between 2:45 and 3 p.m., but Ms. Darth did not turn up until 3:20 p.m. It is understood the current Attorney General Shannon Fentiman will be sworn in as Ms. Darth's new replacement. So it sounds like a swapsie, people. Ms. Darth is a member of the Labor's right faction with Ms. Palaszczuk and Treasurer Cameron Dick. She previously held the AC role, or the AG role, sorry, from 2017 to the 2020 election. Youth Justice Minister Leanne Lynard and Housing Minister Leanne Enoch are reportedly facing being relegated to junior responsibilities. So it just goes on to say that that's where there's some changes coming. I'm not going to read the rest of it. Moving on to the next story, abc.net.au came out on 18th of May 2023. Queensland Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk confirms new look cabinet. Shannon Fentiman set to take over health portfolio from Yvette Darth. So she got the flick, people, because she was just too hardcore. I'm telling you, I remember her in the Queensland when the pandemic was happening, and she was just as bad as Berejiklian in New South Wales. She was sort of becoming the same type of person with the finger pointing and the angry look and do as you're told, I know best. So it says changes have been made to Queensland's cabinet amid ongoing criticism of the government's handling of youth crime, housing and health issues in the state. The biggest changes involve those respective portfolios with Yvette. Ah, so it would be Yvette, I think. Yvette Darth, that's probably right. Now, I've got it right, finally, people. Leanne Linnard and Leanne Enoch all reassigned to new portfolios. Health will go to Shannon Fentiman in a direct portfolio swap with Miss Darth, who returns to her previous position as Attorney General. So they still get big pay packets. Nothing's changed. Nothing more to read in that. We now know what's happened. And also, just to finish that article off properly, it says, this is interesting, I just read this bit now. It says, Yvette Darth was an incredible Attorney General in our state. This is Palaszczuk. Very well regarded. And in my view, that she is better suited to that role. And said that Miss Palaszczuk was dodging questions about Miss Darth's performance in her role as Health Minister. And she says, health is a big role. And Yvette Darth helped us steer the state through the COVID pandemic. That is a huge achievement. In my view, that Shannon Fentiman is the best person to be the Health Minister and Yvette Darth is the best person to be the state's Attorney General. Miss Darth rebuked arguments that her reassignment was a demotion. I don't accept that argument at all, she said. A lot said in health was a poison chalice when I went in. Now, it's a poison chalice when you went out. Not at all. I was thrilled with the opportunity with the black cape. I believe I am appointed as Attorney General on merit. I was 6 years as Attorney General. Miss Fentiman acknowledged the health portfolio would be challenging and called it a huge job. Then they all got the flick anyway when the new government came. So we'll get to that. It's coming up. I think the only one that I think retained it was Yvette Darth, who stayed on as Attorney General. Funny that, when you do the right thing and bags of gold get thrown onto the table and everything seemed to move forward just like it always did. Okay, so just moving on to the next story because I'm near the end of the podcast. I don't think I'm going to get a third person in, but that's fair enough. I'm going to move through them. I don't want to keep doing every podcast with three of them. I'll just sort of mention the ones, maybe John Gerard next week to tie in with what we talked about this week. And then eventually I'll just release the whole lot. So rather than go through every single one of them on the podcast, I'll look for the big linchpins, the big heads of all the problems with to do with health and the government, put them ones up first, and then we'll get all the lackeys probably in the future one when I put the whole lot up in one go. So I probably will release some of the ones in states and territory order, like I said earlier, because that's going to be a bit easier to do, and you'll see those extra people on there with their links anyway. So you'll see the whole team of COVID rats for each state and territory. So just to finish up and go to the next story, it says the Queensland Cabinet and Ministerial Directory, the new Miles Government Ministry sworn in, 18th of December 2023. So this is the new Premier of Queensland because the rest of them got the flick. And it says the fresh-faced Miles Labor Government Ministry is today sworn in at the Government House. The 19-strong cabinet reflects Premier Stephen Miles' priority to deliver better services for all Queenslanders. So it goes on to say what they're going to do. There's a big long list of things they probably won't do at all. And then it goes with a list of the portfolio. So let's see where Yvette Darth, Commander Darth, ended up. Darth Vader. Commander Darth Vader. Let's see where she ended up. So it says, and it goes through the list of all the people, but there I see it. The Honourable Yvette Darth, MP. Attorney General and Minister for Justice and the Minister for the Prevention of Domestic and Family Violence. So that's what she is now, people. We'll have to see what she becomes in the future. So that's just a list. I'll put it up when we get to it. Now, there's a Courier Mail article that's come out. Now, I don't subscribe to any of the Murdochs or any of the other ones. Their news prostitute media stories. So what I do is there's only a short snippet on this one, but I'll read it out because it's worth it. It says, Kylie Lang. And then it says, How Yvette Darth is still in a job is beyond me. It's as appointed by her right factional and close ally Anastasia Palaszczuk, Yvette Darth continues to stand by her as she stuffs up with frightening frequency, writes Kylie Lang. So this is prior to the Miles government taking over. So to most people, it wouldn't have been a surprise that that happened. Palaszczuk got the flick because they were the pandemic people. Whether they want to stay there or go, it's irrelevant. They end up going. They don't have a choice. They get the death threats and they get shown the door. So the next photo, or I should say not the next photo, but the next article with a photo, abc.net.au, and it's very interesting, there's two people, came out on the 18th of December 2023. It says, Queensland's government's new cabinet sworn in, five fresh faces joining the front bench. And they got a photo. And I'm going to count them up because guess what? Yvette Darth is not in the photo. So I think she got rather angry about what's happened to her. So I'm just going to count them up. I'm going to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. One missing. Not in the photo. So what does that say, people? Not a happy person. Anyway. Okay, so I'm not going to read through that story. It's probably more about Miles' government and all the people that are in that cabinet now. And we'll see what they stuff up with next. Okay, people, looks like I'm pretty much at the end of the podcast. I did run out of time. I did want to do a third person, but that's all right. We can do this and still do the top stories coming through as well, because we don't want to get bogged too much down in the COVID thing, because we all know it was a hoax. But I do want to get these stories out so that we can see who the perpetrators were. Okay, this is the Conspiracy Oz podcast for Thursday, the 4th of January, 2024. Thanks for listening. Over and out.